The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I won't put this in the intro very much going forward, but we will be back on YouTube, kind of in long form. That's not super ideal for YouTube, but logistically it helps us out to do it. Also, we're on Facebook Live for everyone on the Terry Talk Sox account. They may be viewing as well. So this will be the setup going forward. Not many spring training additions left. I will probably be back on the midweek if any extensions happen with any of our big three, or perhaps Garrett Crochet, who we'll be getting into. There may be an emergency episode, but we've got one more definite show on the midweek. We have our yearly prediction show. That's probably my favorite show of the year. It would be the postseason one if we ever got there, but yeah, so that's really all we have planned before opening day. And then we'll be back with me tonight, Charlie Smith, Jeremy Schilling, and Charlie will be back in the primary host seat soon, as we kick off the season. But how are you, gentlemen?
Doing well, Joe. Yeah, doing well. Doing well, Terry.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, and it worked out that it's the early week crew doing the early week show. So this is going to be the regular alignment. But let's just go ahead and get into the news as Charlie sips on some freaky tea that none of us have probably ever heard of. Well, maybe Jeremy has, but
no tea here.
For me, yep. In the non-bougie lifestyle, it's probably something I never heard of. But anyway, speaking of bougie, we do have a bougie opening day starter. That's Garrett Crochet. I think we did have Nathan Eovaldi once or twice in the Bloom era, so not a terrible opening day starter, but certainly not Corey Kluber or an unproven Brian Bayo. So, you know, you have the intriguing option in Crochet. If you wanted the veteran option, Buehler was there. If you wanted the feel good option, you know, the hometown guy, that's Tanner Houck. But Charlie, we'll lead off with you. Your thoughts on Crochet?
I'm absolutely elated. I'm so excited that Garrett Crochet is going to be our starter this year, and he's going to be our opening day starter. I think it's a wonderful nod to what I like to call Boston's baseball Jesus. And our first real one since probably Pedro. This guy strikes out two guys an inning, and it's not going to be, I love Garrett Crochet. He's not going to keep that up all year long, but this was somebody who, you know, I talked about a year ago, like when we have that episode where we're talking about our predictions, like this is my Cy Young pick for the AL. And I made this last year. This guy is absolutely electric. And, I'm so excited. This is going to be, I mean, the floor for this guy is, you know, 12 to 15 wins, 200 to 225 to 250 punch outs. I mean, I really feel that this guy is only going to get better. And I'm really hoping that we can get, you know, him as a lifer in Boston. It'd be amazing.
Jeremy, thoughts on Crochet?
Yeah, I mean, this sets up the top of the rotation, hopefully for 5 or 6 years until the front office screws it up. But if it's done right, if there's an extension in place, you know, you can count on this guy opening day over the next half decade, which is what good teams do. Good organizations have, you know, essentially the anchor to the staff. He's the guy that everyone's going to rely on. He's going to be the stopper when things go bad. You put him in place, and you just set him and forget him every 5 days. Try to get him an extra, a day or a blow or miss a start around the All-Star break, and you know, you build from this known commodity.
Well, I mean, it's what we've wanted for a long time. You know, you had Chris Sale in the Dombrowski era. You know, you had David Price, one or two of those years as well. And now we have Crochet. We're dealing with small sample sizes still. Most of them have at least one or two more starts left. I guess Crochet probably only one if he pitched today. But only one pitcher in all of spring training right now has more strikeouts than Garrett Crochet, and that's Hunter Green with the Cincinnati Reds. So he's got 22 strikeouts. Crochet and Cole Reagan's actually tied just one more behind him. So he's going to be a freak. I don't know if Chris Sale's, I forget what he topped out at, and I think it was 2017. It was over three. It might have been 315 or 320. I expect that, you know, as long as Crochet stays healthy, to be kind of a conversation as the season goes on. Can he do it? He did lead all of Major League Baseball last year in strikeout per nine. So we'll see. Another guy that's kind of, I don't know, he's kind of lingering and could potentially be an option. We've got two slots open in the rotation right now with Giolito out and Bayo out. Now, neither of those guys are expected to miss much time at all. Giolito said only moments after Cora announced he would be starting on the injured list that he's really not feeling any pain. So that tells me he'll miss a turn or two, you know, and be back some point in April. But you do have two spots. One of those could go to Richard Fitz, who has a sub one ERA right now in spring training. I think 0.087 or something like that, or 0.87 rather. So he's certainly an option. Cooper Criswell has been brought up, but the intriguing name to me is Sean Newcomb, who came up with the Atlanta Braves in 2017, 18, and 19. He had a sub four ERA across those three seasons, seemed to kind of go off the tracks in 2020, is kind of bounced around from organization to organization. Really intriguing here to see if the new pitching program led by Andrew Bailey, if they might be able to revitalize him, because he was at one point projected to be a top of the rotation pitcher. So certainly an option here in the closing days of spring training.
Newcomb did really well so far. I mean, again, granted, you're not facing teams that have their full major league lineups ready, but he did much better in his small sample size than some other people that we have. And he's striking out one an inning, only allowed a couple hits, just the one earned run. But he did, again, better than some of the other ones that were vying to be either the closer or in the bullpen. So I'm, you know what? We talked about earlier this year, certain names that we weren't sure, like, could we see them being there? And he's really one of the few names on paper that did not get rocked. Like, Crochet was borderline untouchable. His K9 during the spring was almost 20. That's like unheard of. And it's not a number that, you know, major league pitchers that are not closers can really realistically expect to keep all season long. If you have something in the, you know, the 12s period, or even 11s, 11.5 and higher, you're elite. You're in a class of your own. You're probably supposed to win about 20 games. And if you don't, it's probably because of the offense behind you not doing their job. You know, Chris Sale, when he was with us that first year, they struck out over 300, should have been a 20 plus game winner, and he wasn't. And if the lineup behind somebody like Garrett Crochet does what they're supposed to do every fifth day for him, he's winning 20 plus games.
I'm just glad we're discussing options. Unlike the bleep show that we faced last year with the pitching depth. I don't really care who it is, especially if it's only going to be one start. Fitz has shown at the end of last year in September through the offseason and into camp that he's a viable option. I could see him potentially pitching his way into a spot if there was a major injury or even by performance. He's done nothing to dissuade me that he's a big league pitcher. And then you come to find out that he can hit 99, although you don't want him living there. That's how you hurt yourself, is your max velo every pitch. Criswell's shown that he can do it in spurts. Obviously, his stuff is not anything to write home about. But again, it's only one start. So I'm more just of the mindset that when we had these discussions last year, it was, you know, we didn't know where it was coming from. It could be somebody from AA. We kept discussing go outside the organization and get help. You know, they never really did. And when they did, those guys got hurt and didn't pitch. So I just from a pitching perspective, because I think there's other areas too, this organization is in a way better spot going into 2025 than it has been in the last 2, 3, 4 years.
Let's get over to the bullpen real quick. Basically, it's pretty unsettled right now, but I think it finally is starting to trend in the right direction. Earlier in the winter, I thought Garrett Whitlock would probably be the leading candidate to be the closer, but the way Liam Hendricks was talking, it just sounded like if he was mostly firing on all cylinders, he would get it. He has the personality for it, and he has the pedigree for it, but he's really been not good, not good at all. And Whitlock has pitched. He's only had 4 outings, all of which have been scoreless. Another guy who's trending in the right direction, believe it or not, Aroldis Chapman. I don't think he'll be a closer, but he is a back-end guy. And 4 of his 5 appearances in the month of March so far have been scoreless, and he's only walked 2 this month. So that's encouraging as well. We don't know what Andrew Bailey may be able to do with him, but he's your top lefty for sure. And another guy who's kind of been a mess so far, including in his most recent outing, Luis Guerrero. I know Evan and Nick were both pretty high on him. And perhaps he does still have a high ceiling, but he's not making a strong case for making the team right out of camp. So, Charlie, thoughts on the bullpen?
I wholeheartedly agree. Austin Adams was one name that I was actually excited about, and it hasn't really, you know, become something that I think is going to be a reality. But I'm looking at 2 metrics, because if you're getting shelled, and it sucks. Like, I feel for Liam Hendricks. I was really excited to see what that was going to happen, you know, how that was going to play out and what was going to happen, and the fire and the attitude, just the mental, just fortitude that he was trying to push his way through. I mean, this is someone that overcame a major life obstacle, a medical situation. So, as far as he's concerned, there are going to be some growing pains from not being in baseball for an extended period of time. I still love Liam Hendricks. I love his attitude. I love the mentality. He's, to the best of my knowledge, he's not blaming anyone else for his, you know, shortcomings here. But if we're talking about the bullpen, there were certain names that we did discuss. And to your credit, Terry, Whitlock has been almost untouchable again. Granted, we're not facing the full lineups of every major league team that we're facing right now in spring training, and people are, you know, being benched and rested and things like that. But there are going to be 2 metrics that I'm looking at right now as far as who I want in my bullpen, who I want in my rotation. And it's the people that aren't touched. And if you're getting touched, I want you to be striking people out. So if you're getting tapped and you're not striking anybody out, I don't see you making the rotation. I don't see you making our bullpen to start the year. But to your credit, I mean, if Whitlock, for whatever reason, has to assume the role of long relief, or, you know, he needs a day off, you have a backup closer. You have Aroldis Chapman. And as crazy as it may seem, I think we're going to be really happy to have him on our team when it gets down to the brass tacks. Just real talk. Him on your team makes you better.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer Whitlock for one reason, is he throws strikes. The sample size for spring training is meaningless to me. You know, for example, Whitlock hasn't given up an earned run. I mean, a lot of those guys are, you know, in lineups mixed in are minor leaguers, guys that aren't going to break camp with the club. So I find very little value in the stat. I mean, Whitlock just throws strikes. We've seen him pitch for years. They keep messing around with his role and he keeps getting hurt. If you set it and forget it, he knows when he's going to be in the game. He's got a lead in the seventh. He starts stretching. Maybe we can keep some consistency with him staying on the field. So I'm all for Whitlock because, number one, he throws strikes. I do not want to see Chapman in that role. Every ninth is going to be a headache. You know, two, three pitches not close to the strike zone. Yeah, he's going to have the 100-mile-an-hour strikeout, and it's going to be exciting, but I don't want excitement in the ninth. Throw strikes, pitch to contact. You don't need to get three strikeouts to win a game. So, I mean, that's my take on the ninth. I also think without a defined closer going into camp, it could be something we see change based on who's pitching well out of the bullpen.
I'll say this much. If after 1 month of baseball, right, we're talking about this on May 1st, and Garrett Whitlock has had three rough starts and Aroldis Chapman has had one, or not rough starts, excuse me, rough appearances, right, coming out of the bullpen, closing out games. If Whitlock's got three bad ones and Chapman's got one, are we going to harp on the fact that Chapman had one bad outing? Or are we just going to say, okay, you know what, that's not going to be his role? Because I'm genuinely curious. Like, I really want to give this person a chance. Like, Jeremy, in the past, you've said, like, I don't care about your personal life. I want you to be – you're here to play baseball, right? That's your thing. You're here to play baseball. If we're going to judge him specifically on being a baseball player and he's only got one bad one and, you know, Whitlock's got three, I personally don't think I would want to make a change. But I would feel very comfortable knowing that if we had to, we have him there. That's really what I'm saying is I don't, him on your team makes you better.
Well, yeah. I mean, he throws 100 miles an hour. Right. People legitimately fear him. I just worry about him throwing strikes on a consistent basis and putting himself in a position where he's in a high leverage situation solely as a result of his, you know, in inning failures. I don't, whatever you're obviously referencing Chapman getting in trouble in the past and what he did is not something you should be doing. I think he paid his punishment. I haven't heard that he's had a reoccurrence, but like to me, a professional athlete is just that. Like those stuff aside, when you step on the field, you have a job to do. And I, you know, if he's doing it well, and I think he will, he's going to be one of the reasons why hopefully we're playing in October.
I hope we commit to someone, and if that ends up being Whitlock, or if Hendricks just finally gives you two or three more solid outings here as camp closes and they commit to him, then that's fine too. I just feel like if we're playing musical closers or closer by committee, it's going to keep a sense of anxiety in that bullpen. Whereas let's just chill out and just commit to people. We've seen Whitlock do it before. Hendricks has done it, just not recently, and he's a bit older now. Chapman, I think, has resigned to the fact that he's not going to be a closer, and he said he's just here to help. He said all the right things in his introductory, can't remember if it was a press conference or a Zoom call, but I would commit to someone and not keep shifting people around.
Well, that goes for the seventh, eighth, and ninth, as far as I'm concerned. Good teams have defined roles in the back end of the bullpen. You know, so it for me, it's not just the ninth inning. It's guys got to know when they're pitching. It puts them in the mental space where they can start stretching at the certain time, start throwing at the certain time. They know if there's a lead and it's the seventh inning, it's their inning. It sets them up for success. Baseball players, their mindsets, everything. It's a lot of standing around, sitting around doing not a lot, even though you're in a practice or whatever. Those roles being defined as early as possible is only going to set us up for success.
Who are you guys taking? Like, who's the guy you think is the guy at this point to close? Charlie.
I mean, you brought up really good points. I mean, if Whitlock can handle the role, it's going to be his. I mean, originally I thought it was going to be Hendricks, but Hendricks hasn't seemed to have felt as comfortable and as ready as we wanted him to be. So I think it will end up being Whitlock, and Alex Cora needs to, you know, as you know, to Jeremy's credit, again, make a decision as opposed to going in with this closer by committee. I've never been a fan of that. It just does not work. There's never been a World Series team with a closer by committee. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work. So stick to your guns. If it doesn't work out, move to somebody else. I know Jeremy's ready to speak, but I think it's going to be Whitlock with Chapman being your second option, at least right now. I know the Slayton's name's been mentioned. We know that Hendricks was the original expected name, but I think, you know, Terry mentioned already, it'll be Whitlock, and then Chapman will be number two.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Having a number one and a number two is kind of like having a small committee. So just to point that out.
Hold on. Let me defend myself real quick. The question is, who do you think is going to be?
All right, I'll take.
If you're going to have a closer, you're going to have one option. If it's not working, you're going to option number two. But my option one right now is Whitlock. I'm done.
So that's what they call a backtrack. All right. yeah, it's Whitlock for me, guys. I'm not going to restate it again, but I just like the idea of consistent strike throwing in the biggest moments. And I see Andrew DeSanti saying he'd go Whitlock in the ninth, Hendricks in the eighth, Chapman in the seventh. I have no trust in Hendricks right now. To me, he's a fifth or sixth inning guy, or starter's got a high pitch count coming out in the fourth. Hendricks bridges the gap to where you have some trust in guys. Personally, I like Slayton in one of those last three innings, seventh or eighth. And with Chapman being a lefty and Slayton being a righty, you could potentially pick your spots based on where you are in the lineup. So if you have a couple of lefties coming up back to back and it's the seventh, tonight it's Chapman, you know, eighth is Slayton and vice versa. As long as the guy, you know, the guys know where they're going to slot in consistently, I think you can play with it a little bit. I just think Whitlock in the ninth consistently until he proves he can't do it.
I'm with you guys. I'm pro Whitlock at this point. You know, and I hope it stays that way. He had a 1.96 ERA when he very unexpectedly surged into that role in 2021, and then they started messing with him. So I mean, if he can kind of return back to that, I think he's the guy. I wish he was a psychopath like Liam Hendricks and like Jonathan Papelbon was all those years. He's not, but we'll see. And it's encouraging to see him striking out almost two per inning right now. I mean, he's got almost a Garrett Crochet type strikeout rate, despite being in a relief role right now. And obviously short sample size, but the most encouraging thing here is that he had the bracing procedure. He didn't have the full Tommy John. So we haven't seen a lot of data on that, you know, in the major leagues. So hopefully that elbow holds up, and even more so with Giolito, because he had the same thing. He's going to be a starter, much heavier load. So, all right, Devers to DH. I'm going to take the L on that one. I wanted him to stay at third or shift over to first. That wasn't a popular take with some people, but Jeremy will get the W on that one. So let's lead him off.
Yeah, I mean, number one, you know, this isn't the time to be talking about what we could have done to have this potentially happen without the cameras on, you know, in the offseason. Could have been handled a little bit differently. But I'm going to focus on the positive, which is the player and the team figured it out. And I believe Devers when he says he's ready for whatever role gives the Red Sox the best chance to win. And that is very clearly designated hitter. You know, and I've gone into this, so I won't go in depth, but he's for those that say, well, he's not going to stay in the game because he's not in the field. No. First of all, he's a professional athlete. You have the opportunity, and we can always use Ortiz as an example, to go hit off a tee, watch film, underhanded toss off an L screen. You could even see batting practice. You can go have a coach throw you 10 pitches and you can stay locked in. So if a ball beats you in, say, hey, I want 10 pitches inside. I want to get my hands through the baseball. Ball beats you away. Hey, let's go outer half. I want to try to get my timing back. There is actually potentially a positive spin to him having more time to think about hitting, because he affects this team positively on offense and negatively on defense. I know a lot of people don't want to admit that, but that's the case. So this makes us a better team. Now you have Bregman, who is a gold glove caliber third baseman playing third base, and you're going to have a middle infielder playing second base, making sure that you're turning as many double plays, you know, and shoring up the defense. Story at short, Rafaela in center is a pretty good up the middle defense, in my opinion, now that you have Bregman over at third. So it's a good day. When he said that, I took a huge sigh of relief. I think he's going to have a huge season. And I also think that he's starting to get nicked up, the shoulder and this and that popping up, and he's a tough player and he's there for the brand, so he's going to play. But guess what? When you're only hitting, your body doesn't go through the same wear and tear. So just only positives from Devers going to the media and saying that he's accepted whatever the role is going to be.
So I'm totally okay taking the L on this one. And Jeremy, forgive me, because I don't remember your stance on, like, the exact stance of, okay, cool, if Devers wants to be a third baseman, do we keep him there? And do we tell Bregman to, you know, shove off and go to second base? He's being responsible here and listening to his body now. The difference is he didn't volunteer to be the DH. He was voluntold to be the DH. So at the end of the day, while I take the L, I think Red Sox ownership could have handled the situation a whole lot better. You made a commitment that he was going to be your third baseman. You spent $313 million over 10 years. Still has, I think, 8 more years left on that deal, because he signed that in 23, if I'm not mistaken. And the whole situation has not been pretty. It's been a little bit ugly. And according to a couple of sources, Sean McAdam being one of them, there was a rumor that he had asked for a potential trade because he wasn't really happy about the situation, which would have made this, like, Red Sox-Devers relationship not go very well. And if Devers is not in your lineup, you're not a playoff team. You're just not. And I think right now, I'm putting my eggs in the basket, the Red Sox are a playoff team right now in the American League. There are a lot of players that went over to the National League. The National League is so stacked, it's insane. That's kind of watered down the American League, and some of the additions that we made us better. That said, Jeremy's absolutely right. He's not going to have the same wear and tear. The throwing isn't going to be an issue. I do think, you know, he already got his money. He already got the bag, so he can't really complain. You're now spending $27, $28 million over the next however many years for, you know, a DH, essentially. $28 million for a DH. Yeah, I expect you to now be able to play well over 155 games. I don't expect you to ask for a day off as your DH unless you're being asked to then play third base for, you know, a 20-game stretch, which I don't think the Red Sox would do now, considering everything. Last year was a nightmare. Last year's situation with him playing when he was injured, they should have shut him down a month, 2 months before they ended up shutting him down. He was so, like, I appreciate the grinding mentality, but the longer he was, like, playing through the injury, wincing every single time he swung, favoring one side, it was a disaster. It was just awful, and I didn't want to see that again. So in that regard, yeah, I'm happy that he's going to be the DH. Am I upset with how the whole situation unfolded? Absolutely. Do I think he's forgotten with how that whole situation played out? No. And if, you know, Bregman does not stay after year one and he just lights up the Christmas tree for the first year of that deal, it's going to be an interesting conversation if he leaves in free agency. I don't think it's just going to be like, all right, cool, you can be the third baseman again. You're going to have to really, like, you're going to have to kiss up to him a little bit, because he's been, at this point, doing what he's doing now, the epitome of a team player, team first mentality, which you can't take that away from him, whether he was volunteered or voluntold right now. But the situation overall, even though I'm taking the L, could have been handled with so much more grace. I'll leave it on that.
Yeah, next year you just go get a different third baseman.
Well, I'm not going to, I mean, it is what it is at this point. Second base is pretty largely unsettled. Christian Campbell does not look ready to take over out of camp, I wouldn't say. I mean, he's hitting 152 right now with a 263 on base, but the two glaring areas, he is a power hitter, has not hit a home run yet, and has only hit one double in 33 at bats. So you could see a Hamilton Grissom platoon there. If anybody's ready right now, none of us were really talking about him over the last several weeks, but the guy who looks the most ready is Roman Anthony. So it could happen. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out, but Willy Abreu is back. He's got a week and a half to get ready to take that spot out of camp. But I don't really know what the status of the big three will be. But Campbell was the guy I thought was most likely, and he looks like he's the least ready right now.
Right. I would agree. Honestly, if you're not going to give any of those guys full-time reps, you don't bring them up yet until you absolutely have to. And guess what? It's baseball. It's a human sport. Human element is going to come into play. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be opportunities for them to come up. But Terry, I think you might've mentioned this on a prior episode. I can't remember which one, but if neither one of them or you haven't signed that long-term deal to be with the Boston Red Sox, they're not going to bring you up earlier. They're going to try to get that team control for one extra year, which I forget what day of the year it is, but they're going to wait until date X. And then that means you can get called up after that point. And you're, you know, under team control for one more year, but there's no absolute rush to bring them up right now.
Usually about the third week of April is when it's that something cutoff like that. Is. Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't want to quote an exact day, cause I feel like it always changes every year. You know, it's usually there's a variance or something like that. But yeah, I honestly, I have no desire to bring any of them up right now at the present moment, unless it's a must need bring up.
Jackson Holliday last year was all the rage and he was terrible for most of the season. I mean, he hit a .189, five home runs, didn't really make the impact that the Orioles were hoping he would. And so it can happen. And he was the number one prospect in all Major League Baseball last season. So we'll see. This year it's Roman Anthony, and he looks pretty confident. So I'm not saying he's going to be a stud, but he looks pretty good.
Yeah, we're set up for success right now. Like I said, I'm falling down on it. I'm going to stand by my comment. The Red Sox are a playoff team, and I don't think they did Jackson Holliday that many favors. I think the hype was there, the expectation was there, and it was just a situation where he just needed a little bit more seasoning and he didn't get it. And then the pressure was extreme. It was very intense and he did not live up to it, to your point. But I do think that this year he'll have a much better sophomore campaign. He was borderline irrelevant last year. Yeah, he had five home runs, but again, limited sample size. I don't think anyone thought he was going to light up the Christmas tree and play all season. But I mean, this is somebody that would have struck out over, you know, 180 times if he played the full season, you know? So
absolutely. All right. Well, we will wrap on that. Jason and Nick will be back with us on the midweek show. I don't know if that'll be Wednesday or Thursday at this point, but it'll be one of those two nights. We'll go over more developments. Maybe they'll sneak in one of these extensions to the big three and we'll be able to cover that. And again, as I said in the intro, we'll be back Monday night to do our year-long predictions. So that's division winners, wild cards, MVP, Cy Youngs, and World Series matchups. So always a fun show. Thank you for joining us. We had some participation from the YouTube crowd and some very positive feedback. We appreciate that. Everyone have a great start to your week. Take care.